Movies and Booze. I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It is indeed time for Movies and Booze. Dean McGuinness, Chris Wasser and Fionnuala Jones. Join us in the studio once again. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
It feels like, Chris, that Gladiator 2 has actually been out for a number of months now, we're only finally getting to review it.
Yeah.
You know that feeling?
I do, yeah. And like, we've just been talking about this off air. There has maybe been an awful lot of Paul Mescal this year, but it's only the second film that he's done. I mean, the last one was All of Us Strangers, which actually had a US release in 2023 and then came out here at the start of the year.
Right, yeah.
So this is only the second Mescal project. Actors got to eat. They got to pay their bills, I don't want Mescal to disappear.
Yeah.
But there's been an awful lot of them, and it's because, you know, Gladiator 2 cost a fortune and needs to make a fortune, to justify all the buzz. Yeah. So we're going to be looking at that today, and then we're also going to be looking at Denzel Washington is part of two of our films today. So Denzel Washington stars in Gladiator 2, and then he produces and his sons direct and star in The Piano Lesson, which is right in cinemas and is also coming to Netflix. Very different type of film.
August Wilson, because I think I saw Fences and they were all plays, weren't they?
They were, The Pittsburgh Cycle, So this is like the third Washington film because he actually directed the third Washington film adaptation of the Pittsburgh Cycle, because he actually directed and starred in Fences. Did you see Fences?
I did, yeah.
Liked it a lot.
Yeah, I liked it, yeah.
And I thought it made a bit more of an effort than other films to kind of, we're not just going to have a filmed play sort of situation.
Yes,
we're going to make this as cinematic as possible. And also it had Viola Davis in it. So that's five stars.
Indeed, straight away. Easily, straight off there. And today, Dean, we're talking about the colour of beers rather than the taste of beers.
We're looking at two blondes, and what we're looking at is the flavour. Now, the colour from the beer comes from the grains that are used in the beers. So usually it's malted barley as the base, but sometimes they use things like wheat and oats and corn and rice and things like that. With these two beers, they're both golden beers. They're both blonde ales, but they both have two different types of fermentation. So one is a Trappist blonde ale from La Trappe with a Belgian ale yeast fermentation. And the other one is Bourgogne de Flandre, which is a variation on an East Flanders ale brewed as a blonde ale with a slightly sour, tangy taste.
Okay, right. We're getting into serious beer nerd territory here with that.
For a change.
One can only assume that after his appearance on Ross na Rún, that was the final element that was needed before Conan O'Brien was offered the Oscars.
Yeah, must have been. That must have been what secured it for him. Yeah. Literally just announced before we came in. Look, safe pair of hands. He'll be fine.
He's Has he ever done it before?
That I don't know.
I don't think so.
Which is kind of like semi-shocking. I'm open to correction on that, but I don't think he has. There was a lot of word that like Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman were campaigning to do it. And I think they came out and said, not this year. We would do it, but not this year. I'm really glad it's not them. Conan, safe pair of hands. It'll be good. It would just be too much singing and dancing and too. It would get not good, I don't think.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, and there might be a kind of a, we're so funny.
Yeah. You think? No, there would. And they'd be like elbowing each other and it would just be, I'd want to gnaw my own hands off. But
It's interesting. Still, people still want to do it then.
Well, yeah, kind of. I think there was talk that they were struggling to get someone for this one. And they kind of put the feelers out for a few people and they said no. So I don't know, was like Conan third or fourth choice, which is, again, kind of shocking to me because, again, safe pair of hands. Genuinely funny, like seems a kind of obvious choice in some ways. I don't know, but yeah, he's hosting next year. He seems quite delighted about it based on his social media.
All right, well, good for him. Lady Gaga's going to be in Wednesday.
She now, sure is.
In the entire thing, or is this just a walks in and walks out?
So I didn't realise this. So this is for the second season that they're still filming it in Ireland as we speak. And I think they had tried to get her on for a bigger role, but she obviously couldn't do it because
she's doing that Batman rubbish.
Doing the, Jonker 2. And obviously she's the new album is coming out. I think it's due for release the first half of next year. I think it's like March or April, I think. So obviously very busy with that. So she is, it's a cameo role to answer your question.
Walk-on
role. I thought she was still here because the news only broke this week, but it was last weekend she was here and apparently she's been and gone. So.
Oh, she was here then?
Yeah. She was here.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that was.
If anyone saw her, I need to know like what she was eating or what she was doing. If she's like.
If there's been any Gaga sightings? what was Gaga doing?
Yeah, truly.
Yeah.
But she walks into a hotel, does she say, what's the name?
Yeah. G-A-G.
Yeah. How are you spelling that? All right, okay.
But it's interesting because it only came about because, like, obviously Wednesday was, like, super popular for Netflix, but there was this particular clip of Jenna Ortega dancing as Wednesday, and it went viral to a Lady Gaga song, Bloody Mary, like, super viral, and then Jenna was asked about it, whether she'd like Lady Gaga in the show, and Jenna was like, obviously, yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see how Gaga navigates the acting from now on, given how bad, like, there's real questions around, like, is Gaga a good actor or was A Star Is Born a fluke? You know what I mean?
Because, oh, God, would that happen? Yeah.
Do you know? Like, I think it's like she could act for the rest of her days, but, like, I think there was a genuine question of, oh my God, like, she could actually, you know what I mean? Like, she was nominated for an Oscar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and now everything since has been a bit like, ugh. No, I will say a lot of the criticisms around Joker 2 didn't really have anything to do with her.
It's the film.
But, I don't know.
Well, I mean, have any, since A Star Is Born, what else has she been in?
House of Gucci.
Yeah.
Not good.
Her performance not good?
Like, the accent work wasn't great.
Yeah. It was a bit cartoonish.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. All of her roles are a bit cartoonish. I do think she can act. I think she's very good. I think there's a certain type of character that maybe she can play. Like, I don't think we're going to see her do a straightforward drama. Even like A Star Is Born. A Star Is Born, it's pretty much a musical. And it was very much, you know, it was written for her. It was perfect for her. But I think I'd prefer to see Lady Gaga make a film every now and then, just kind of do the music, and then every now and then just come up and make an event film. And also, not the worst thing about Joker 2. Definitely not.
Okay, fair enough. Because it can be very, you know, forgetting her name, a woman who did Catwoman, and then that, you know, like, she'd won an Oscar and then she did Catwoman.
Oh, Halle Berry.
And then it was all over for her.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
I think she was trying to pivot to the film to eventually kind of move away from the pop music ultimately. And now that that's kind of not really proving to be as straightforward a path as she thought, I feel like she's maybe reconsidering everything.
Back to the songs again.
Yeah. A little bit, which I'm not against, but I do also think she's
a bit
over it.
If she's not, like, if her heart isn't in making music anymore, then you might have a series of crappy albums.
And also the new single is not, which I think is very good, has not been commercially that successful. So, like, it's everything's up in the air now.
No.
Yeah.
So when she was over here, she was probably staying in a B&B in Glasnevin or something.
Yeah.
No money. So they're making Oscar predictions already.
Like, kind of. Do you know, like, people are making Oscar predictions all the time. You know what I mean? But I thought it was interesting because all the reports I read for this are very much like, who knows? It's anyone's game. It's a crazy year. I'm not going to get into the acting categories because we'd be here all day. But just in terms of the best picture, I think is interesting because obviously you'll have 10 nominees whenever they do come out. But it's just saying that, like, obviously last year it was so clear cut with, like, Oppenheimer and Barbie and all of that. Whereas this year, you're feeling the impacts of, like, the strikes and stuff like that. So they're saying, like, 2025 will be a way clearer year or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, the 2026 Oscars for the 2025 year. But this year, like, it's just kind of weird. I think they're saying for Best Picture, the only one they think is kind of a given is Dune 2, which, again, that feels like it was released 8,000 years ago at this point. Such a weird year that it's been. Then you've, like, big commercial heavy hitters like Wicked and Gladiator 2 that we're obviously going to be talking about later that you don't know if they're I know, again, Chris will have his own thoughts on it, but, like, Gladiator 2 seems to be kind of semi-divisive in some ways, and then it's, like, good, maybe not great.
Wicked
2, obviously, we don't know yet. I haven't heard a lot from critics. I think that could get a look in, maybe more so than Gladiator 2. A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan biopic with Timothée Chalamet. Again, we don't have a huge critical consensus on that yet. That's out later this year. Deadpool and Wolverine were, like, heavily campaigning for a nomination.
Were they? Oh, but we'll present it, and can you give us an Oscar?
Yeah, but, like, I don't think they'll get it.
No.
The previous two films weren't nominated and, like, whatever. I think Conclave could get a nom. I don't know if we've talked about or if one of the other critics has talked about that, but it's the kind of Pope drama one.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
Other potentials, you have Emily Perez, The Brutalist, Queer, Sing Sing, Baby Girl, A Real Pain. There's chatter around Inside Out 2 as well, because obviously box office smash, critically beloved, but animated films don't tend to get a look in outside of the specific animated categories. So that's all to say. Too long, didn't listen. it's anyone's game, girls. It's yeah, anyone's game.
There you go. So there you go. There's a, you can make your bets now based on all of that. Right, so tell us about our first beer, Dean.
So we're tasting two blondes today. The first one that we're tasting is Le Trappe Blonde. It's a Trappist blonde, so we're drinking for Jesus.
Okay.
The profits for the beer go to charitable causes that the monks do, and the upkeep of the abbey and their living expenses.
Do they say what kind of charitable causes? Are they? Do they have a list?
Shimei has a chapter house in Uganda. Le Trappe, I believe, do work in Africa as well. And Le Trappe, they also do bread making and chocolate making in the abbey and nice. Kind of sell that and,
yeah.
you know, on a small scale. The upkeep of the abbey as well, you know, they have kind of quite nice areas, and it's, I imagine, not the cheapest to...
Yeah, probably to not, no. Rate, you Can know. You visit their abbeys?
It's a little bit funny. Shimei, I have visited, but on invitation. There's a separate area that you can go to for Shimei called Espace Shimei, which explains the Trappist philosophy. Le Trappe are a little bit more open. You can go to the abbey and stay there. And some students do it, like people who are doing PhDs and stuff like that, to go there. I went there for their 125th birthday with my wife, and I thought I'd be staying in a hotel, but they said, no, you stay in the abbey. And I said, well, you know, Frida's my wife, so that's fine. They said, oh, yep, that's fine. So we arrived, and they brought us down a corridor, and they said, right, that is your cell. And then another few steps, and Frida had her cell.
Oh, so his and her cells. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Okay. But probably, I imagine the cells wouldn't have a double bed anyway.
Well, that's the thing. If there is a double bed in an abbey, it really has you scratching
your head. That's true.
But yeah, they have a very strict lifestyle. They have 8 hours of work, 8 hours of prayer, and 8 hours of sleep.
Gosh.
So, yeah.
So, like, the 8 hours of prayer is continuous? Or are they not breaking it at all?
Like, interspersed during the day.
Yeah.
And they would have kind of Gregorian chant type
thing.
So, yeah, no, it's a very strange thing. We were at Le Trappe just for kind of a day and a half. And we arrived there, came in through the gates, and noticed that it seemed very peaceful. But within about 3 or 4 hours, you felt like you were in a different world. And it's hard to describe what it actually felt like, but you really did feel like you were in a different world, but didn't notice that you were.
Yeah.
And then when you left, you kind of walked out the gate and you kind of went, whoa, back into the real world
again. And that's noisy.
So it is a kind of a strange experience. So the two beers we've got are both blonde ales. The colour for beer comes from the grains that are used in the beer.
Mm.
So when you have barley that comes in from a field, it goes through a process called malting, where it's initially steeped, soaked in water, and then the grain is kind of tricked into thinking it's time to grow. And just at the point where it's about to sprout a little stalk, they dry and heat the grain to stop the growing. But what they've done is they've allowed the grain to develop starch or foodstuff in the grain that would normally sustain the grain while the stalk is growing. And then the brewer nix that as food for the beer. When they heat the grain in a very, very light way, you get pale malts, and that gives you a blonde colour. If they heat it a bit more intensely, or if they roast the grains, you get the dark malts that give you the black stouts or the red beers. Now, generally with blonde beers, you've got lighter flavours with them. But what we're looking at today is how the fermentation changes the flavour. So if we were to have a lager, that would be the type of beer that would let the pure flavours of the grain shine through a little bit more. The next step up from that would be a kind of a straightforward ale yeast. So the type of ale yeast that they would use in Irish red ales or in English ales. And they are ale yeasts that tend to focus on fruity flavours. And when they ferment the beer with the ale yeast, it's fermented a little bit warmer. You get fruit flavours coming through on it. These two beers are the kind of next steps on. So you've got what's called a puff yeast, a phenolic off-flavour yeast, being used for the Belgian ales. And it is similar to the class of yeasts that are used for German wheat beers, where you get banana and clove flavours. And with these Belgian ale yeasts, you can get lots of spicy flavours, slightly warming spicy flavours, sometimes prickly spicy flavours, sometimes unusual spicy flavours and fruit flavours. So in this, what we get an amount of green apple, green grape, peach, apricot. There's ripe banana, but it's like the very ripe banana flavour. It's kind of like the foam sweet bananas flavour, you know, that flavour that you get in a sweet foam banana sweet. And then that is complemented by an amount of spice flavour, a distinct amount of clove in there, certain amount of white pepper and nutmeg. And they balance each other out. There's enough bitterness in it to provide balance, but the spice gives balance as well. It contrasts very, very much with the second beer that we're tasting, because that's a very, very different type of ferment.
Yeah, I know. It's lovely. It's absolutely, it's kind of fragrant as well.
And easy to drink. It's like a lovely, kind of easy sit back and enjoy it beer. But if you're a total beer nerd, then you can spend hours and hours describing exactly what's in it.
Well, it's given the story about the visiting the monks, Dean was saying, Dean is right. Belgian beer brings me to my knees, says one texter. What film would you like to talk about? Can we have to do Gladiator?
We have to do the Mescal one.
You have to do the Mescal one. And just going back to Deadpool, I'd love to see a Deadpool versus Deadpool movie where Ryan Reynolds has to punch himself in the face for 133 minutes.
I would watch that.
Yeah, we'll take a break back in a minute.
I remember that day. I never forgot it, that a slave could take revenge against an emperor.
Where were you born?
I don't know. I never knew a mother nor a father.
You will be my instrument.
Who are you?
Did you hear that crowd?
The greatest temple Rome ever built. The Colosseum. Because this is what they believe in. Power.
That was Gladiator 2. So I suppose start with what's the plot?
The plot. It's annoyingly familiar to the first one. It really is. It's like Gladiator, take two. But you've got Lucius, played by, he was Spencer Tree Clark in the first film, but he's Paul Mescal all grown up now. And Lucius, it's not a spoiler to say this, they put this in all of the marketing materials, all of the trailers. He is the son of Maximus, played by Russell Crowe in the original. And he ran away, or was sent away, by his mother Lucilla, once again played by Connie Nielsen in this film. He ran away at the end of the first film and he started a life of his own. He was getting away from his destiny. He was supposed to be the Roman heir or the next emperor, but, you know, his mother didn't want that for him. So he has grown up and started a life and a family of his own in Numidia. But when the film opens, the Roman army, led by this wicked general, played by Pedro Pascal, they're on their way to Numidia to conquer, to gather up all the men, to turn them into slaves, to turn them into gladiators. So it's kind of a similar thing where you've got this warrior who has his own army, this barbarian man named Lucius, that's the Mescal's character again. They lose to the Roman army. He's shipped off to Rome. He's turned into a slave. There's all this talk that, you know, the only way to kind of, you know, get out of this situation is to fight in the Colosseum. And you have this slave owner, an arms dealer named Macrinus, played by Denzel Washington, and he takes a shine to him. And as you heard in that clip there, he says, "You'll be my instrument. You'll be a way for me to make a name for myself in Rome, and to also make a name for myself with the twin emperors," played by Fred Hershinger and Joseph Quinn. So once again, you've kind of got this champion who has to prove himself in the Colosseum, and he'll come up against all sorts of crazy bad guys. You've got a cackling emperor. You've got two cackling emperors. Mm-hmm. You've got a mother who knows that this gladiator is her son, but also knows that the gladiator doesn't really remember his other life, despite the fact that he was, you know, kind of like 10 or 12 maybe when he ran away.
Yeah.
He doesn't remember this life, or maybe he's choosing to forget the life that he used to have. And you've got this villain played by Washington, the hammiest Washington you've ever seen, who is setting up, you know, kind of moving around the pieces on the board so that he can rule Rome for himself. That's the basic plot.
Okay, so kind of the same plot as last time.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, in terms of this guy, you know, trying to prove himself in, you know, Rome's greatest arena. I think it would be foolish, so foolish to expect way too much from Gladiator 2. And I think that's what an awful lot of people are doing at the minute. And the truth is that it's not a masterpiece, but it's also not a disaster. It is somewhere in between.
Okay.
There's an awful lot of things that are right with it, and there's an awful lot of things that are very wrong with it. That derivative plus, you think after 24 years and various different... I mean, at one point you had Nick Cave writing the sequel to this, where, you know, Maximus was supposed to come back.
He was a bit depressed.
Oh, yeah. Maximus was supposed to come back from the dead. The gods were going to send... Oh, the gods were going to send them back to kill Jesus Christ, and it all goes wrong. But we didn't get that film.
I wish we did. I
would pay good money to see Gladiator 2, Christ Killer. That was the name of it, by the way. I did not come up with that. That was the name of it. but instead, we get Gladiator 2, Paul Mescal's Era. And the... You know, look, the plot is derivative, okay? You were looking at the performance. We're looking at the combat sequences, how, you know, the special effects, the performances. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. Mescal, I think he's doing something quite interesting here. Every now and then, because Ridley Scott has said that, you know, he cast him because he reminded him of Richard Harris. And remember, Richard Harris is actually in the first Gladiator. So he is giving off that Harris vibe. And there is something very theatrical at times about his performance. Okay. Sometimes he's, you know, chest out, voice booming, you know, killing baboons and rhinoceroses and other men in the arena. And, you know, he's playing the part of the big movie star. Sometimes he does that normal people thing where he plays it so cool that you're like, wake up, Mescal.
Yeah.
Wake up.
Are you this actually acting here?
This is a $300 million dollar blockbuster. The introverted stuff is not going to work here. But it's interesting. You know, it is quite soulful. It's intelligent. It's thoughtful. And despite the fact that I had problems with it, I was sitting there thinking, and I've watched this twice now. Ooh. So, yeah. So, okay. I had time to kind of like see all that's good about it and see all that's bad about it. And I was thinking to myself, all the other actors that were considered for this role, from Austin Butler to Richard Madden, they would not have done it decent a job as Mescal in it. So okay. I think he is right for the role. Everyone else, though, I mean, I think Pedro Pascal thinks that he's in some sort of soap opera with Connie Nielsen. They have their own little romance thing going on that doesn't really fit. The two boys, Fred Hechinger and Joseph Quinn, in the first film, you genuinely believed that Joaquin Phoenix's character, you know, could be this powerful emperor that people were terrified of. These two lads are just annoying idiots that you want to see killed in the first 10 minutes. They're just idiots they're just cartoon characters. And then there's Denzel Washington, who always just sounds like a man who's having trouble digesting his dinner. He's just, everything he says is just over-egged and far too much. The accent is a little bit, you know, because it's the Denzel voice, like, you know, everyone else is kind of doing their Shakespearean voices, but Denzel's like, nope. You know, there's a scene in it where Denzel just comes out of his house and goes, horse! Horse comes over to him. Like, that's the Denzel we're getting.
What did he say? Excuse me?
There's another scene where Denzel is reading a newspaper, and I was sitting there thinking to myself, I don't think those lads had newspapers.
Yeah.
I really don't think they did.
New one.
So as I said, there's the story, there's the performance, and then there's the, you know, people go for the big combat sequences and the set pieces. Those are quite impressive. Like, you know, I do like the fact that Ridley Scott is among the few directors now who is interested in building things and, you know, leans more towards the practical side of things. And I realize I'm talking about Gladiator 2. There's going to be an awful lot of CG in here to recreate ancient Rome. But there is a sense when you're watching the fights that, oh, these are two guys that are actually fighting each other. They are using real props. There are real crowds of people here. You know, you can reach out and touch this thing. And that's what I quite liked about it. So some of the stunt work, the combat sequences, that's quite stunning. Had an awful lot of fun with that side of things. It's just the plotting is just a bit messy. The editing's a little bit creaky. It's very ordinary. So, you know, all of those reactions that you heard, you know, remember that first screening 3 or 4 weeks ago when people were saying, cinema's back! Yeah. This is the greatest movie that's ever made. I'm kind of thinking those guys might have been told to say that. It's not the greatest film you'll ever see, but it's also not the worst.
Is there going to be a Gladiator 3?
There could be. It certainly leaves itself open to another installment if everyone involved wanted to do it. Like, we're not ending on a cliffhanger here.
Yeah,
but you know, there is a sense towards the end that, oh, we can build. Like, it'd be interesting to see what happens next. Ridley Scott has said that he's 8 pages into Gladiator 3, whatever that means.
Oh no,
I don't know how long it's going to take.
Hopefully, it's the Christ Killer one.
Hopefully, yeah, get Nick Cave back.
Yeah,
he also said that his next film is going to be the Bee Gees biopic. So it's going to be a while, yeah, before we see it.
Okay, that's a bit of a jump. Bee Gees biopic.
Yeah,
really, wow. I'm really interested in this Star Wars: Return of the Jedi that was released in 1983. Has been reclassified from U to a PG. So does that mean like there was boobs in it nobody noticed?
I thought it was really interesting as well. So basically, like, our classification system is like similar enough to the UK, but like what would be a U in the UK is a G here, I'm pretty sure. And that's like generally, if a film is a G or a U, it's suitable for kids of like school going age, generally. And then anything above that is like, you know, whatever, it's the varying things. But yeah, as you said, Return of the Jedi has just been reclassified from a U to a PG in the UK because of its violence and specifically the scene in which Han Solo is frozen in carbonite, because they figured that was kind of too tense for kids.
Okay, I can remember that. It was kind of maybe a bit scary if you were a kid.
Yeah, they said the detail and overall intensity of violence in the film meant it was changed to PG for the violence and kind of the threat of violence, despite this being offset by humour and an emphasis on loyalty and adversity. So There you go.
God, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they did that. They went back over old films.
Yeah,
they changed their mind about it.
They've done a couple of different films. There was another one I think that I thought was funny. It was the ABBA movie from, I think it was 1978. ABBA, the movie, was changed from a U to a PG due to mild sex references and language in a suggestive song title and lyrics, discussion of a sexual term, and band members talking about one of them being given the title of Sexiest Bottom. So...
Yeah, well, I thought that ABBA movie was pure filth.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
What does Dean think of the market for IPAs? It is exhausted at this stage. 80% in my off-license is the fruity boars. Why don't people just squirt lemon washing up liquid into their Budweisers and leave some space in the shelves for decent ales and stouts?
Yeah.
That's a strident opinion there.
My preference is for there to be diversity with craft beer. And it seems like when you look at the States grew up to about 12-13% market share and then pushed up towards about 16-20% market share. But that extra kind of pocket of market share, I think really is this kind of fruity alcohol drink that was taken by cider at one point, was taken by Alcopops, you know, different things. And with New England IPAs, like New England IPAs are delicious if you like sweet, fruity beers. But if you're into something substantive, it
tastes like beer.
Like, yeah, it's a kind of an Alcopop-y type of taste experience, albeit a natural fruit flavor in it. Yeah, I'd prefer to see kind of 100 different styles rather than just one. But there is a thing. I've a friend, when I talk to him about craft beer and say, "Are you into craft beer?" He's, "What, IPA?" Yeah, craft beer. You know, it's like, yeah, become like synonymous, and I'm there. It's not the same thing, you know. IPA is craft beer, but craft beer should be about kind of 100 different things.
Yes. Okay, fair enough. Right, you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break after that. More of this. Chris Fanula and Dean are still with us here in the studio. Dean, tell us about our second beer today, which is quite different from the first, as you promised.
Quite a bit different, yeah. So what we've got, we went through kind of three types of fermentation, and the Le Trappe Blonde was the puff yeast or the Belgian ale yeast fermentation. This one is a mixed fermentation. So it's kind of in the same world as lambics, but a little bit more muted. It's a sour beer. And with mixed fermentation, what you've got is, with this particular beer, it's fermented in oak vats. And the oak vat has a certain amount of yeast and microorganisms that live in the wood. Now, they've got a bit more control over the fermentation because they have an idea as to what a particular oak vat will do, whereas with the spontaneous fermentation with the lambics, it's literally just whatever happens to be flying by in the air at the time that
yes,
that lasts in the beer. So with this, the key difference with this, you've still got those type of fruity flavours, but there's a distinct tang. It comes through kind of almost like there's a lemon-lime fruit flavour to it with a kind of an acidity.
Yeah, there is, distinctly.
Cooking apple as well, maybe, you know. And
the person who texted in a minute ago probably won't like this, I imagine.
And yeah, so it has kind of the same fruit flavours, but because the acidity is brought up quite a bit. Now, that acidity, it's really kind of causes your mouth to water. Mm. As I'm talking this, I'm worried that I'm going to be spluttering all over the microphone. I can feel the saliva kind of developing in my mouth. When you've got acidity, it's like your mouth gets triggered, that it knows that it needs to develop saliva to kind of mute out the lower pH. But yeah, it's got a little bit of spice in there, but a little bit more sourness to balance it out. The spice is coming through as a creamy nutmeg. There's a kind of an Old Spice type character, but again, that lemon lime and apple flavour, the main things, and then a bit of vanilla to kind of soften it out a bit. But yeah, quite a different, like you've got fundamentally similar grains being used, but the yeast does a kind of a much different job, and the fermentation.
Yeah, and quite a different colour as well.
It's a bit lighter, yeah. There's a kind of a richer golden colour to the Le Trappe, and you can kind of taste that. Now, the acidity does cut through. So when you've got something that's acidic, it tends to cut through the palate, and it makes something feel lighter on your palate, mainly because it's cutting through the palate. With the Le Trappe Blonde, there's a bit more substance to it. You can kind of feel it, kind of almost more chewiness in the
Yeah, very pleasant indeed. Now, Denzel is in Gladiator. He's in the next film we're going to talk about, and he's going to retire.
He's on about it, yeah. I think he said this
when he's done 19 more things.
Yeah. he has a lot more on the plate, but he said in August that there are very few films left for him to make. But in that also revealed that there is going to be a Black Panther 3 because he's in that and that's one of the last things he's doing. Because I think there was a question around whether they would go back to it again. But yeah. I think the second one made a boatload of money. So like, obviously, and like generally again, kind of well-liked when Marvel is in kind of a flop era, I will say. So Denzel's doing, as you said, he's obviously in Gladiator 2. He's doing the... presumably the final Black Panther film, who knows, we don't know what his role is in that, and he is also starring in a Steve McQueen project that is, I don't think we have any details on that, a film adaptation of Othello. Like he's flat, he's 70 next year and he's still
he's going at it, isn't he?
The next few years, because he's doing and he's doing Othello on stage as well with Jake Gyllenhaal, that's in February 2025. So, and then he said he's going to do King Lear, and then he said he's going to retire after that. So
God knows, so he's never going to retire.
So, like, it's not for ages. He's, like, soft launching the retirement.
Yeah.
Which I admire.
Yeah, and Black Panther 3?
I mean, I'd be really... I actually still haven't seen Black Panther 2, I have to say. But, again, by all accounts, was, like, good? No, Chris is shaking his head.
Yeah, it was all right at best.
I think the best thing they could have done there is, like, Chadwick Boseman was Black Panther. And I know, tragically, he only got to do the one film. And it wouldn't have made sense commercially for Marvel to do this, but they should have retired it with Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
They really should have.
Absolutely.
It was a wonderful film. It was a wonderful performance. And you can't make a superhero film or a sequel to a successful superhero film without the superhero. And that was the problem that Black Panther 2 had.
And like, whatever about the second one, because that obviously also kind of served as a tribute to him in some ways. Like, what are we doing in the third? Though I kind of would like to see Denzel being hammy in a third Black Panther, selfishly. But anyway.
Maybe we've seen enough of Denzel being hammy. Let's move on to our second movie of the day. It is The Piano Lesson. Even more Denzel is involvement in this. Here's a clip.
You feel that? That's your family. That's your blood. Sometimes you be in trouble, they might be around to help you. Tell your mama to tell you about that piano.
Right, that's The Piano Lesson. So is this a trilogy of plays?
There are 10 of them.
Oh, God. Answer that question then.
Gus Wilson, he created a series of plays known as the Pittsburgh Cycle. Obviously, all of these dramas, which through the prism of sort of like chewy, complex domestic situations, they kind of explore African-American history. And this is the third play that Denzel Washington has produced. The first one. Or by Wilson, that Denzel's produced. The first one was obviously Fences. He starred in that. He also directed it. He had a hand in the screenplay. The second one was Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which starred Chadwick Boseman, who we were just talking about, and also Viola Davis. Viola Davis is in the other two. And he's just in producer mode here, which seems like a bit of a missed opportunity because his son, so you have his two, he has two boys and two girls. His two boys here are involved in this. So his youngest son, Malcolm, he's directing. This is his feature directorial debut. And his other son, who is a bit more well-known, but more established at this point, John David Washington. He is sort of, he's sort of playing the central schemer here. So Denzel doesn't actually show up, but I think it would actually be lovely to see him act with John David and then also to be directed by his son. But the story is quite simple. You have, and also takes place mostly within a single setting. So it's very much in, you know, stagey theatrical mode. But you have John David Washington playing the part of boy Willie Charles, who has returned to the Charles family home or the home of his uncle in the 1930s towards the end of the Great Depression. And he's returned home in the middle of the night, not with a welcome, not with an invitation, but with a plan. He's parked his truck outside. He's brought his friend in, played by Ray Fisher, who's quite good in this. And they have this plan to sell all of the watermelons that are in the truck. It's a truck overflowing with watermelons. They're going to sell that because he wants to buy back the land on which his enslaved ancestors work. Because the white owner of that land has been killed under mysterious circumstances. He actually fell down a well.
Okay.
So we're kind of asking ourselves, and also boy Willie Charles's family are asking, did you push him down a well?
Yeah.
Are we going to have a problem here? But he's not. It's going to take a little more than the money he's going to get for the watermelons. He also wants to sell a family heirloom. He wants to sell the family's piano, which is in this house with his uncle. But his sister, played by the brilliant Danielle Deadwyler, she says absolutely absolutely not, because might I remind you that, you know, our family, our ancestors, our enslaved ancestors, images of their faces are carved into this instrument.
Oh, gosh.
There's an awful lot of family history in this thing. And I think they also believe that moving the piano might cause some sort of, you know, might have some sort of supernatural consequence, because there are all sorts of like supernatural suggestions in this film.
Okay.
So every time someone touches the piano, bad things happen in the house. And that's sort of the setup. The uncle, I should add, is played by Samuel L. Jackson, who seems to be the only performer here who understands that there's a difference between, you know, basically bringing a play to life in a film and turning a play into a film. You know, because it's very much, and that was my biggest problem with this. It never quite shakes off its stage roots. Which is a shame, because you have that thing. You have that thing that you had in The Whale last year, which was so annoying, where characters are moving upstage and downstage depending on what mood they're in. You know, if they want to, you know, for the major outburst scene, they'll move towards the camera as if they're moving towards the audience. And you just feel like kind of, you know, knocking on the screen and saying, you don't have to do that. So there is a bit of an artificial gloss off the whole thing. It looks as though it's kind of, you know, Malcolm Washington is just moving his camera around the stage. So that kind of annoyed me. There is a sense, though, as well, that John David Washington and a lot of the actors here, they were in one version of this play at one point. They actually starred in a Broadway version of this 2 or 3 years ago. So they're so used to the parts that they're acting them to perfection. So I do think we are going to see some awards interest for Danielle Deadwyler, because she was sorely overlooked for an Oscar for her lead performance until there a few years ago. And she is just brilliant here. And Samuel L. Jackson is so calm, so steady, because we hear Samuel L. Jackson and we think
snakes on a plane.
Or that he's going to be the one leaving the house going horse. But no, he is so calm, so collected here, and it's a lovely performance by him. Everyone is very good in it. I just thought the whole thing was a bit heavy handed, quite repetitive. It erupts into song at one stage, so you know, there's a little bit of a musical in there. And I think the worst thing that it can do is, I mentioned those supernatural suggestions, they come to a head in the final 20 minutes, and it's such a silly finale, and it spoils what could have been, I don't know, what could have been like a real prestige drama. Like, you know, I wish those supernatural things weren't in it, but they're in the original work. So it's a flawed piece.
Well, that's the thing. They have to be kind of faithful to that, I suppose.
So it is. Yeah. It's a flawed piece, but it is well performed. I just wish more of an effort had been made to actually embrace the medium in which this version exists.
Yeah. Pamela Anderson is back.
She is.
And people are saying, like, she's given a good performance at something.
Yeah, seemingly, yeah. I've seen a lot of reviews saying that it's kind of like role of a lifetime, life-changing role for her. This is The Last Showgirl. It's directed by Gia Coppola, the granddaughter of Francis Ford Coppola. We love nepotism. And it follows this. She's starring as this like seasoned showgirl who her show is coming to an end after a 30-year run, and she's looking at like, you know, what's next for me, essentially. It's in cinemas December 13th. It looks very good, I have to say. Just based on the trailer, it looks like very, very good. You could nearly argue that it's practically semi-autobiographical given Pamela's career trajectory. So that's probably what she's bringing to the performance as well. In terms of other people that are in it, you have Jamie Lee Curtis, Dave Bautista, Billy Lord, Brenda Song, Jason Schwartzman, Kiernan Shipka. So like very good cast, very good supporting cast. So I'm looking forward to it. Go watch the trailer if you haven't. It's very intriguing.
Okay, that's intriguing. Yeah, that is intriguing. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Dean, Chris and Fionnuala.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.